the Rove and Sam catch-up.
Chitty, chitty, chat, 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 chat.
Is there anything more to talk about today than how excited Sam Frost is at the idea that you will hear her chat with a true crime author? Sorry, not just any true crime author, your favourite of all time.
Oh, he's just the best. And you know what?
He's your J.K. Rowling.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing that I like about him is it's so easy to read. So even if you're a slower reader, you can breeze through his books just like that. I've read his books. I started on a Friday, finished on a Sunday. It's just zip, 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 zip. And you don't even have to be into crime to really appreciate it.
Who doesn't want to hear about former convicted actors from a sitcom having poo thrown at them?
Exactly. And you know? Open with that. Like, you've already got me hooked. You know what I mean?
I remember the day you read that and you came in and you told us all about it.
That's right.
It was so unbelievable. Excited. The stuff that happens in prisons is unbelievable, team.
Now, the risk of jumping ahead, because you will hear it today. Just the glee and excitement in your voice, because I was here for that chat, but I wasn't
in the studio.
I didn't listen to it at the time.
Yeah.
So I was very happy to just hear the finished product as it went to air today, and just hearing just how passionate you get. You almost get violently passionate. It's like, oh, I knew it, and you hear the thumping. God, oh, I was going to ask that. Oh, it's like you're having an orgasm in front of him.
Well, I pretty much was. And then even, you know, the stuff that I can't say on air or even in the chitty chat.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Sitting outside chatting to him, like, oh.
Hearing all the real stuff.
My God.
Now, cue Jamie the button pusher.
Hi.
When did this get recorded? Last week or something?
So, yeah, it was last week.
This had to go to the lawyers.
Give it to the lawyers. And then they've given me notes and then I've had to edit appropriately and take things out.
They talk about how the homemade dildos in the women's prisons.
Yeah.
Can I say it on the chitty chat?
You can
say that.
Of
course you can.
Do you know what the chitty chat is? Mate, this is why you listen to the good stuff. Okay. A lot of the time we're just talking show bags, but this time you get to know the good stuff. So, in the women's prison, he talks about how they grow zucchini patches. You can do the math. Yeah. But what they also do is they get rubber gloves, fill it with washing detergent, make a dildo.
Oh.
Make dildos out of washing detergent. Can you imagine if that glove broke?
Yes. And now I don't even know that I could.
And they're
I don't
quite even violent.
Oh, what?
In the separate. Full stop.
Oh, right.
Next sentence.
I'm sitting there thinking, here's in my head, I
can see where you're going.
I'll never use a zucchini emoji, an eggplant emoji the same way again.
Yeah.
And then cut to you just, man, it's so violent.
I apologize.
Has anyone ever been held up? Like, or attacked, like, with a dildo?
Probably.
Or any kind of sex toy?
Probably. We should Google it.
Could it be used as a weapon?
I'll Google it.
Yeah, hey, you should Google it.
Do you think that I should stop talking about crime so much? Because maybe I'll get targeted.
I know that is a concern of yours. Well, no, because
I don't do anything. I don't talk about specific people. No, or maybe they'll be like, I know how much you like it. Oh,
you know
no,
what?
I'm scared.
He would be my thing.
No,
if
no.
If I could
I'm
offer
scared.
Any advice.
No, I'm stopping.
You know what you don't do is lean in and whisper, that'd be so good, Jamie.
Is that what Jamie said?
Yeah. It's A, you don't say it, and B, you don't whisper it. You don't lean in and
Jamie,
whisper it, creepazoid.
Screw you.
And you would. Imagine I was in a steam room with you. Would you want to hear that? Oh, so much fun how much we have to use against him. But my concern for you, Sam, would be you will get, like, from inmates. Can people get podcasts in prison? You would know this.
No.
You would know this.
No, they can't. They
don't
they
have
can't.
Access.
They can't have access to the internet.
Oh, so now I've got so many questions.
They don't have access to the internet. No way.
I wouldn't know.
They're not allowed phones.
Are they allowed news?
They're
allowed to watch TV, right?
They are allowed to watch TV. They sometimes get the newspapers, but they have to filter it first, except I don't know what their filtering system's like. Like, for example, the Kmart catalogs, the Target catalogs, the ones with children in it, they get taken out because of the pedophiles.
Okay, whispering probably.
Because the pedophiles in the prisons.
Jamie, again, we've had this conversation. Are we allowed to say pedophile on a podcast?
We can use pedophile.
Oh, okay.
We can't just shorten it.
All right. Well, Jamie, what are you doing? What are you looking up? Why are you running
Jamie's
off into your school scrapbook?
No, I just threw out a piece of paper which I needed.
All right, guys, we've got things to do. Sorry, chitty
chatters. What if I just said file? That's fine.
Yep.
What about files?
Here we go again. Oh my God.
Oh.
And that's, look, and I will be the first to say, on a very inappropriate topic as well, before anyone just gets upset.
Come on.
I get it.
It's a really inappropriate topic. Let's just edit this whole thing out. I don't know anymore, guys.
No, just get that in.
All I know,
Sam,
is
what is it? What is it that attracts you to the dark world of true crime? Just as a little something.
I just find
I'm very interested.
I find it fascinating because I struggle to think bad thoughts about someone's appearance, let alone, like, it doesn't make me feel good if I have a judgmental thought in my mind, let alone a criminal who is just so evil and toxic and has the ability to do such horrendous things to someone. I find it fascinating. I find it fascinating that these people exist and then what happens to them afterwards and the life that they live. And I just think it's, because I'm just so the polar opposite, I think, yes. Anyway. I just think, wow, these people exist and there's a lot of them.
I have always had a real fascination more with your criminal psychology side of things.
Yeah, totally.
So the idea of what makes you do that? What is it in your brain that even says, like, I used to read a lot of, not just necessarily serial. Oh, there was one of those. Buy issue one at your newsagents, and then you subscribe, and week by week it builds to a comprehensive library called Murder Case Book.
Oh.
Right? And it started with the Yorkshire Ripper. That was issue number one. And we worked through, and it got to the point where it's like issue 167, and it's like two stories in one because they're really struggling. Mm. But everything from, oh, Son of Sam, I hear a voice through a dog that says, hey, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, fascinating, right?
To just, hi, I'm a rich dude who thinks I can just get away with it, and I just want to see if I can.
Yeah.
That's what fascinates me, what that part of your brain that makes you do that and cross that line.
Like
it actually really is very interesting.
In the news today, for example, like there's a gangster guy who's being accused.
Gangster ER or gangster A?
Is
he gangster or is he gangster?
Gangster, yeah, like, okay, legit. Gotcha. Right. His crime is he apparently has killed a debt collector.
Man.
So he must have, you know, been getting hounded by it. So boom, catch you later.
And just a world we don't even know. Until you hear a story about this person's just been taken out and at some sort of revenge hit or something.
Yeah, fascinating.
That's when you just go, oh yeah, it's happening all around us.
Yeah.
It's like, now if I could bring it back to J.K. Rowling, it's like wizards living amongst the muggle world.
Exactly.
Wow. Way to lighten the mood, Rove. Good save. You have to beat the word muggle, right, Jamie?
Yeah.
Here's the significantly edited catch-up.
Rove and Sam.
Guys, one of my mates, spoilers, he works in this building. Whoa. He used to be a chef. I went out for dinner with the team, right? Had a couple of vinos. You know what happens when you have a couple of vinos? People
share their
stories.
Mm-hmm.
Mate, he told me a doozy of a story. He said that when he was a chef, he used to do the worst things to food. If someone was going to complain, he would be like, let me teach you a little something, something, right?
Right.
And people would bring back the food if they were like, oh, the gravy's not gravy enough or whatever. He would like sabotage it. And it's always your worst fear. That's why I don't complain about food because
that's why I'm always happy for the gravy to be at whatever gravy level it's at.
But do you know what I mean? Like, you don't ever complain because they do horrible things to your food. I'm sure of it. And this just proves it. And he said sometimes, like, he'll get the steak if they say, oh, you haven't cooked it the way I want it. And then they'll wipe it in some, like, the dirty bench.
Oh, I know places that don't. On the dirty bench?
Yes. I'm not saying he's a great person. I'm saying he's great for a laugh, but that's about it.
All right, you know what? I think we're due for one of these.
It's time. Step in to the professional confessional.
Great
Kitchen
call.
Edition.
Great
Kitchen
call.
Edition. 13 10 60. Are you someone who's worked in a kitchen or does work in one who can fess up to what happens behind the scenes.
The chefs, like, this is only one chef, and he's it. And he, you know, he likes to sabotage people. He likes to have a good time. So I'm not surprised that he used to sabotage people's food. But okay. I want to know if it happens to other people, people that work in the kitchens.
How's this? I wasn't even a chef, Sam. I was just a little kitchen hand back in the day.
Cutie.
Young Rovi. He's working in a nameless place. But I was working in the kitchen and had to. It was a lunchtime rush. Got to get some ham for the ham sandwiches.
Delicious. I love ham sandwiches.
They're not going to make themselves. I'm on the meat slicer. Go, go. Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Someone yells out to me. I turn. I wasn't paying attention. Tip of my thumb in the meat slicer. Off it comes. I was sent home with a Band-Aid on my thumb. Yeah. Went home. Had the day off. Had the next day off. Came back. Quick lunchtime rush. Back on the meat slicer.
Oh, no.
My thumb tip was still on the blade. 2 days of not cleaning up the meat slicer, and there's a bit of my personal DNA for all to enjoy in their sandwiches.
So people are cutting up ham with Rove's thumb tip.
Yeah. If it was done now, like, you could throw up and probably unlock my iPhone. So 13, 10, 60, we want to know what is your kitchen professional confessional.
Rove and Sam.
We've got Shazza in Castle Hill. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Now, are you a chef?
No, it's one of my mates.
Oh, what happened? Tell us.
Well, he worked at a restaurant and he used to tell me that when people ordered steaks and they ordered them well done, and he said surprisingly a lot of people did, the chefs used to throw the meat onto the floor and stamp on it and sometimes even spit on it.
Why?
And that was because it took that extra time to cook and they preferred to just have it, you know, rare or medium quicker.
Well, if I may, it takes even longer to rub it on the floor and step on it. There's another couple of minutes worth of stomping.
I can't believe that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Look, Shazmeister. I've also heard that the well-done steaks, they save the ones that are past the use-by date, because if they're going to char it anyway, why give it the good stuff?
That wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me either, Shaz. Wouldn't surprise me either.
Guys, I have well-done steak because I don't like seeing the blood. It makes me feel a bit yicky.
Well, at least now, no blood, Sam, but possibly footprints. Think of it as tenderising. Sophia from Balcombe Hills, good morning.
Hey, Sophia.
Good morning, guys. I used to work at a very popular sandwich shop in the city. Right. And let's just say when the meatballs went off, they kept on serving them.
Oh,
they were pretty rank. They stank.
Yeah.
Did anyone ever complain?
No, which is really surprising. I don't know why. No one ever complained.
Oh,
they just ate it.
Put enough of that sauce on and who's going to know?
Exactly.
This is why
meatballs.
I had food poisoning on the weekend, Rove. I ate something from a food truck. That's my own fault. I can hear it as I'm saying it. Don't worry, guys. Belinda, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, lovely. Now, what secrets can you tell us about the kitchen trade?
There's a lot of secrets. A lot.
Oh, Belinda, I've been in it.
Belinda, are you going to make us guess?
I've been in it for 16 years. So one thing I've done personally, I worked in a pub and the front of house girls and I got on really well, and they gave me a table docket and said, this is your ex with his new girlfriend who he cheated on me with. And then my chef just goes, I think I'm going for a smoke now. I'll leave you with that. And the apprentice and I put their grilled chicken, like for the raw chicken, into the dishwasher. We put it through a couple of cycles to poach it and then put it on the grill to give it grill marks.
So you cooked it with a dishwasher?
Yeah, they didn't eat it.
So
they sort of didn't eat it because they sort of noticed something floating in their drink. So I've got no idea what the bar girls did.
Mate.
Oh, so you were attacking from all sides.
It just proved
that front of house and problem. Back of house can get along.
Belinda, here's your problem. The bar people get sloppy and give the game away, and you could have otherwise happily had them eating dishwasher chicken.
Yeah.
But the bar people just can't be on it.
I think when he saw my car in the driveway and saw my chef go out for a cigarette, he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, fair enough. Like, you don't go to the ex's kitchen if they... You actually don't go to their workplace. You have no idea what they're going to do.
Absolutely. Well, look, thank you, everyone. And look, as you said, Sam, plenty
there
of
was
more calls.
So many calls, Rove. I'm never eating again.
Rove and Sam.
I have a quest for questions.
Questions with...
When we say interesting stories, Sam, sometimes those stories come in a whole bunch of books about tales from the inside, and one Sam Frost couldn't be more excited.
Oh, my God, I'm so obsessed with this. James Phelps, he's a crime author. He's written books, Australia's Most Murderous Prison, about Goulburn Jail, Inside the Walls of Long Bay Jail, and now he's got a new one, and I read it in 2 days, Rove. It's called Australia's Toughest Prisons.
So when you had the chance to sit down and chat with James Phelps, needless to say, you jumped at it.
Rove, it was a true fangirl moment. Here's my chat with James Phelps. James, thank you so much for coming in.
Absolute pleasure.
I am obsessed with these books. I've read all three of them. And every single time I buy one of your books, I've read it within 2 days. I think it's brilliant. I never put it down. I obsess over it and just want to keep talking about it. So I'm so happy that you're in the studio. You interview a lot of inmates and you share quite a lot of detail in the books. How do you firstly convince them to talk to you?
Yeah, some of them actually are very reluctant to do it, and they're probably the best people to get because they're not going to tell you porkies. You get a lot of people that want a bit of infamy, and they're very easy to get, but half the stuff they tell you probably hasn't happened. But it's just a matter of gaining their trust. So a lot of them I'll write a lot of letters to and get to know them that way, and you know, you meet them 4 or 5 times before you actually gain their trust, and to get them to go on the record, it goes to a whole new level. But yeah, I've had some interesting episodes with it, with a couple of inmates getting in trouble while they've still been inside for things I've written. And
I was going to ask about that, because you're reading the books and there's so much stuff, like, you know, details about what happens in the jail, stabbings, people smuggling things in, like all sorts of things, crimes that have happened on the outside. And I have thought that reading it, going, you know, they're naming people, they're going on the record, and you think, what's the ripple effect to these dangerous people, putting it in the book?
You think all the things you'd mention would get you in trouble, but one of the guys actually got bashed and had to be put in segregation because he revealed that he had one of the top jobs in the prison and was getting paid $15 a week, and everyone, all the other crims, got really jealous, like, why do you have that job? And that's what got him in trouble, not dobbing on anyone for stabbings or drugs or anything. So it's a very unique system, and you've got to be very careful what you say.
You do talk about terror and ISIS in your books, and how big of an issue is, I guess, ISIS in Goulburn Jail in particular? Like, that's a massive problem, right?
Yeah, it's huge. Corrective Services tried to play it down when I first wrote about it and broke it a couple of years ago. But since then, we've had the guy that, you know, got the ISIS symbol carved in his head in a jail. And the guards will tell you that it's the second biggest problem to drugs. It's what they watch. They've got beheading videos on phones. And you've just got this environment where you've got all these men that are very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And they get converted to Islam in jail, a lot of pressure. And
they get paid to be converted, right?
Some of them, but it's more you get bashed if you don't, especially if you're in one of the Lebanese yards. If you're a Christian, you will get bashed and thrown out, and it's very scary. And you've got all the terrorists in jail, of course. So all the blokes that have been convicted are there, and they can preach to the others, and they're pretty good at what they do.
Well, I saw in Australia's Toughest Prisons, the inmates' version, the accused terrorists have written a letter saying about their conditions of, you know, they're getting treated badly in jail. And you're like, mate, you're a terrorist. Too bad, so sad. But you do a really good job of trying to not be too opinionated about it. You're like, look,
I'm sure I said boo-hoo.
Yeah. But how do you feel, like, you know, when you are talking to people and, you know, these are mass murderers or rapists or terrorists, and they're going, yeah, look, you know, I'm in a really shitty cell. Like, how do you react to that? Because you kind of feel like saying...
Depends who they are. Yeah, well, okay. Someone like Martin Bryant, I can't feel sorry for them. Yeah. I'd like to see them, you know, get a bit of jailhouse justice and thrown around. But in saying that, you know, we do live in a democracy and people have rights and they have to be protected no matter who they are. So,
you think there's a lot of corruption?
There is a little bit, but like these officers, I've got to be honest, some of them are the most brilliant people that I've met. Their job is just horrible, and what they have to take home with them. And it's like anything. I think 99% of them are law-abiding and professional, but there is that 1%. We have written about them. But what I can tell you is that the officers actually hate them more than anything. They'll give them the big serve if they find out. They won't talk to them. They're sort of gone for life.
Yeah, right. Do you think that the prison system, the way it is, do you think that people go in and they can reform, or do you think that it just makes people worse?
Depends who they are. Like, I sort of break the crims down into a couple of categories.
Yeah.
So you've got the career criminals. They're the people that are involved in, you know, drug dealing and all that sort of stuff. They'll never reform. It's part of their job going to jail. You know, they go in and learn as much as they can.
Yeah.
You've got drug addicts, which are called junkies. I mean, unless they get off the gear, they're no hope of rehabilitating. And then you've also got psychopaths. That's your Ivan Milat and those type of peoples. You know, they're not going to reform.
Yeah.
But the rest of them, yeah, you've got a chance. I mean, if you're just a one-off, if you're, you know, you've done something wrong, you know, one punch or something like that, you definitely can.
You do talk about Robert Hughes from Hey Dad. You opened the Goulburn Jail book with how he was treated when he first went in, which was really interesting because we spoke to one of his victims and I actually told her about that. I was like, mate, in this book, let me tell you, he's having a bad time. Do you feel, I guess, justified?
Yes, I've got to be honest. I mean, it's one of those things where you look at it and you go, oh, that's not real good, but geez, it was funny. The guy had poo thrown at him. I mean, that is just classic. Men lining up on either side of a gate yelling out, hey, Dad, throwing poo and wee that they've collected in their milk cartons.
Yeah.
Then him going and have a cry over on the back hill. The guards wouldn't even shower him. And he got on the phone and, you know, it was the first time he'd shown remorse. He cried to his partner and said, I want to come home. One of the funniest stories in the books, it's not really disgusting or anything, but it's about a guy that was sleeping in. He would never turn up to muster, and the guard's going, what's this bloke doing at night? So they decided to watch him. The bloke had a PlayStation in his cell with about 10 games, and he was staying up all night playing it, and he didn't get to muster. And he also started renting the PlayStation out to other inmates. So it was this whole sleepy wing.
Even like get that sort of stuff in?
Well, that's the funny part. I mean, most of the time it comes in your body, so the PlayStations aren't very small.
But it's like, I always find it fascinating when, you know, you're talking about when visitors come in, because they're usually the ones that are smuggling the drugs in, smuggling the phones in, and then I always try and imagine it. Surely the guards can see them wriggling around trying to squeeze things.
They can when they leave the phone on and the prison officers have the phone number for the phone.
I read that story. I loved it.
It was on left on vibrate and they just kept on ringing it while they were interrogating him. And the poor bloke, we can say poor bloke, I guess, was just wriggling around. Like, he was so uncomfortable.
How uncomfy. Do you ever get scared that someone's going to target you for what you've written in the books?
Yes. I had a pretty big scare after the second book. Someone was after me.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's just say I had a few baseball bats lying around. And
gee whiz. That would be the most frightening thing, because you know so many things, and especially if someone doesn't want things to get out or whatever.
It's the old shoot the messenger. I mean, I'm not the one that said it. So, I just write the truth, and if they've got a problem with it, I can't really help that.
And so are you working on another prison book? Please say yes.
Yes, I am.
Fantastic.
You'll get your fourth instalment sometime next year.
Are you able to give like a little sneaky snippet of what it might be about?
I am. It's on women this time. So it's the green is the new black, not orange. We wear green in the Australian prisons. And it is absolutely shocking. I didn't think that the women would be this bad, but they're twice as bad as any of the men. And
What sort of things do they do?
Men spend a lot of time turning objects into shivs for protection and
violence. Absolutely.
Women do the opposite.
Oh.
So this great story I've just heard about a zucchini garden in a particular jail. And they were all growing the zucchini as big as they could. And it gets even more disgusting because they'd wrap them up in gloves so they could share them around.
Oh, that's so foul. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. I'm excited. I've got so many things that I want to say. I could literally sit down with you all day and be like, okay, so when you wrote this...
When I wrote these books, I thought my audience was, you know, 40-year-old men with beer guts and tattoos, and here I'm looking at you saying you're a fan. Have you got some problems up there?
Probably. I've got so many crime books. I love it. Like, I've got Iceman, The Mafia, Confession Killer. Like, I love it. I love all of it. And then people come over to my house, they're like, what the hell is wrong with you? I'm obsessed. And they're brilliant. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Oh, there you have it, James Phelps.
He's so good. So he's got Inside the Walls of Long Bay Jail, Behind the Walls of Goulburn Jail, and his newest one, Australia's Toughest Prisons Inmates. Oh, my God. It's so good. Guys, get your hands on it.
Now, can I make a little behind the scenes reference to what he after he finished the interview? Sam, you got your books signed.
I did.
And what did he write in one of them?
Sam, I think you have a problem.
Well, what an incredible chat. Thanks for bringing that one to us. And I dare say none of us will look at PlayStations or zucchinis the same way again, Sam.
So good.
Roven Sam.
Sam, in the last 24 hours, I've learnt that I have 3 new jobs.
Oh, congratulations.
I had to do a work thing yesterday that required me to get on a plane. Before I decided to go there, I caught a cab. And before I did that, I had to top up the groceries.
Sure. Sounds like you got a busy day.
Yeah, because you'd go, but you're probably sitting there thinking, but that doesn't sound, it's busy, but where's your job in all that? People are doing it for you. Oh, hell, wrong. Because I headed out into the world having finished what I thought was my standard work day. I say, thank you very much, Sydney. It's been a joy.
Yep.
Sam, I will catch you tomorrow, mate.
Absolutely.
We go off. We do what we need to do. I head down to the supermarket. It's only just downstairs from this very building.
Yeah, it is.
As far as last time I checked, I didn't draw a paycheck from that particular supermarket chain.
Coles.
But when I get my food, and it's just a couple of things in a basket, I'm in a bit of a rush, I get to the checkout, what do I do? I have to scan the item. I have to put the item in the bag. I have to then use my little card to do the FPOS machine myself. I'll put in all the details, and out I go.
Yeah,
I'm now working at a major supermarket chain, apparently.
Hey,
you're welcome, Curtis Stone. You're welcome.
You're not getting paid for that, Rove.
I ain't getting paid for that.
Yeah.
Well, is that the time? Better make my plane. I'll jump in the cab. All right? Where to? The airport, please. How do I get there? What's the best way to go? Are you kidding me, mate?
Mate, taxi drivers not knowing where to go is my pet peeve. It just bothers me. And they're like, oh, what way? What's the best way? And I'm like, I don't know, dude. That's why I got a cab, because I can't be bothered thinking about it.
Yeah, look, and I'm not saying everybody needs to know every which way to go. But when you say, well, could you look it up on your phone and tell me how best to get there? You've got a phone! You've got a car with a GPS. So now I'm telling the cabbie where to go. Turn left up here. I might as well be Siri. Then I get to the airport. Well, I've got to catch my plane. Quick, I better check in. Do I go to a human being, Sam? No. Apparently now the major airlines have employed me as well, because I scan in my little barcode. Yeah. I'll tag my own bag and I will physically put it on the plane.
The benefit is, though.
Man, I'm exhausted. I work for so many companies. I can't believe it.
The benefit is, though, you don't have to talk to people. Which is great. I think it's fantastic.
That's where we're headed with this ultimately.
Because do you know what it probably is? We're all so self-obsessed on our goddamn phones all the time. We're all stuck in our technology that we're like, you know what? We don't want to interact with people anymore.
So now I don't have time to be on my phone. In the olden times, yeah. I would have had time to be on my phone, Sam. Because while Johnny Nametag is sitting there going, scanning my items, and then little mate at the end is bagging them in, I can do whatever I need to do. I can look up Twitter. I can look up Instagram. Oh, Fro01's back. Hooray. Like.
Thanks.
Now I've got no idea what you've been up to, Sam. I don't know if you and Rocky have bought a great new Christmas tree or not, because I'm too busy doing everybody else's job. Oh, my God. But if you are wondering, we've got a great deal on carrots at the moment.
Roven Sam.
Sam, you know, we're all grown-ups in this life.
Yeah, sometimes I question how grown-up I actually am, but yeah.
And grown-ups, as a general rule, get to sleep in the same bed.
Oh.
But I would like to know, 131060, do you sleep in separate beds?
No, I've heard of people doing this.
Here's the thing. A friend of mine was with her partner. They have done it. It's been locked and loaded. There's no secrets here.
Yeah.
They know what everyone's got going on downstairs.
Copy.
But when they've gone to stay at her parents' place,
mm.
they were told, separate rooms, miss.
Oh.
Can you believe, even as an adult, being told, no, my house, my rules?
I think it's pretty funny.
I would dare say that mum is aware of what's happened. Mum's a wise woman. Mum has been around the block. Mum has obviously produced her own children. She knows about the birds and the bees and what happens between the sheets. But still, there's something in your head that says, no, no, no. You in that room, you in that room.
Yeah.
And so they had to spend the night in separate beds. I think there was a bit of sneaking to each other's room in the middle of the night.
Oh, of course. You'd feel like a teenager again.
Maybe it makes things more fun and exciting. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was a teenager and I was like, Mom, can this boy stay over? And she's like, absolutely not. And at the time I was like, oh, you're the worst. And now, reflecting back, I'd be like, mate, 18-year-old me, pull your head in. But so I can understand that. But as an adult, like, how old are we talking, Rove?
In their 20s, mid-20s.
Mid-20s, yes. Yeah. See, you're allowed to sleep in the same bed, right?
You're at your peak. But and I think there's something in the parents' mind about if I go to bed with both of you in separate rooms and wake with you in separate rooms, my conscience is clear. I don't know what happens in the middle of the night. To jump all the way to another generation, Sam, my grandparents, my mum's parents, slept in separate beds when they were older.
Oh, do they love each other?
Absolutely. But they were in the same room, but in two separate beds.
Yeah, right.
And now I would dare say if I offered that to my wife, she would say absolutely, because you jump and you kick your legs around, you make weird noises, you're up at 4 o'clock. Are you kidding me?
But maybe it's the long distance in me that gets sad about that. But I think there's nothing more exciting than cuddling and spooning.
Absolutely.
It makes me a bit sad sleeping in separate beds. I'd feel so disconnected to my partner.
Well, look, maybe some people do it through their choice or not. But I'd be very interested to know, do you sleep in separate beds? Or even have you been forced to do it?
Yeah.
Much
strict
like my
parents.
Mate. Strict parents. Who knows? 13, 10, 60. Have you been made to sleep in separate beds, or do you enjoy just sleeping in separate beds?
Rove and Sam.
Renee in Blacktown, good morning.
Hello, how are you going?
Very well. Do you sleep in separate beds to your partner?
Yes, unfortunately I do. I'm a bit of a sleep talker and walker, so sometimes I forget who's beside me.
What's the craziest thing you've done in your sleep?
He tried to hug me one night and I've actually thought I was getting attacked.
So now, kicking him Renee, off and... here's the big one. Who makes the call? Yeah. Is it you saying, for your own good, I will leave? Or is it him going, all right, we need to have a talk. There's going to be, I'm getting out the chainsaw.
We try it and then he says, yeah, I've got to go back to sleeping separately. I just can't. Because once I wake him up, he just can't get back to sleep.
Now, Renee,
he's lying there frightened and I'm just snoring again.
Oh. Renee, I watched this documentary and what happened... And what happened was, is it's people that think that they're getting attacked in their sleep and it's actually quite dangerous. Have you ever had anything really, really scary happen, or are you going to do anything about it? I'm really intrigued.
People
have committed crimes in their sleep.
I know where you're going with this, Sam.
Sorry, Renee.
Sam, have you ever attempted to kill your partner is what Sam wants to know.
Just kicked off the bed and he's hit the ground. That's about it.
All right. Keeping it safe.
You should check
Thanks
out this documentary. But Emily in Kingswood. Good morning, Emily.
Morning, Rove and Sam.
Now, Emily, do you sleep in separate beds to your partner?
No.
Oh.
Okay. So what's your story? Do you know someone who has? Have you forced someone to sleep in your bed? Are you calling to get to the Cook Islands?
Do you just want Amy Schumer tickets? Let's be honest.
No, so the reason I'm calling is I'm actually not allowed to stay at my partner's house.
At all?
Oh.
Okay. Thank you, Emily. All right.
Oh.
Well, look, straight to the point. What else do we need to know? What else
Mate,
do we need to know?
Mate, you got my story, Rove.
Guys,
I wasn't expecting a follow-up question.
Mate, you already went too long with caller number one. I'm trying to bring you back on track. We appreciate that.
Kate from Penrith. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Very well. Lovely. Looks,
Kate, I'm going to be honest. I'm slightly confused, but I think you're going to get us back on track. What's your story?
Get us
Let's just
back
leave
on
it at
track,
that.
Kate.
I do sleep in the same bed as my husband, but it was actually on our honeymoon. We went to Thailand, and when we finally had the flight, everything, got to the room, and it was twin beds.
Oh no. So did you end up like just squishing them together and just dealing with it, or did you just go, you know what, let's make the most of it and just sleep separately and I'll see you in the morning?
Oh, it was a bit of a miscommunication, and then we eventually got a different room with two beds in it, but oh god, it was hilarious.
Now, I've tried that. I've been at places where they try to do the sneaky, it's two single beds pushed together and just put one, you know, double
one
bed
sheet
quilt
over the top
to fool you. And in the middle of the night, you sort of find yourselves meeting in the middle and slowly dividing the bed, and you end up stuck in a crack in the middle. That ain't the honeymoon you want. That is not how you start a marriage. Look, I reckon, Sam, we've got to give our Amy Schumer tickets to Renee, our first caller. She's, you know, just so she doesn't kill her husband in her sleep, because yeah. I know that's what you're hoping might happen.
No, I'm not hoping. No one ever hopes that.
No, you think it's a great story.
You can go to, like, sleep training camps and stuff like that. They monitor your sleep and, you know. Anyway, okay. I'm getting off track.
Story for another time.
Rove and Sam. Joel Edgerton is one of our country's best actors and is producing some early Oscar buzz for his role in the civil rights-inspired movie Loving. The film is based on the real-life couple whose 1967 court trial legalised interracial marriage. I can't believe that wasn't allowed to happen back then. Wow, 1967 sounds really racist. Thank goodness we don't have any racist, sexist or bigoted people in 2016. And we all live in happy Narnia where we ride around on unicorns and everyone loves each other. Oh, Rove sighs, sad face emoji guy.
Since I've been gone, I didn't realise everybody's been riding around on unicorns.
Yeah. Look, you've missed a lot, mate. You've missed a lot. Look, first thing I want to say, I don't want to put you on the spot and you don't have to say too much about it, but I want to say how great it is that there's Oscar buzz for the film and for you at this point. It must just be, everything else aside, just a nice feeling to know that this movie is being very positively received.
Yeah, I mean, look, it definitely tweaks the ego a little bit to have those conversations, but I think it speaks to the film at large and the way people are responding to it. And at the time in 2012 when we were making it, you know, the same-sex marriage bill was going up towards the Supreme Court, but before that, people were going state by state trying to defend the rights for same-sex couples to be married. So that was also a big thing at the time we were making and has become more and more intense. And the whole film really swirls around this idea of, you know, having an empathetic experience with two people that you might otherwise judge, and puts two people that are the centre of these big political debates and really shows you their lives. Because I think with politics, we often forget about the people at the centre of these issues.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. The film itself has some really intense scenes dealing with racial segregation and the violence that comes with that. Now, we've heard that you and your co-star, Ruth, had quite a unique way of getting some of that tension out.
So Ruth, before she does a take, has to punch someone as hard as she can in the face. And it has to be a different person each time.
Have done
so
that.
So by the last day of a shoot, the crew just look really f***ed up.
Like,
she'll punch you in the stomach, that's fine. But she loves the head or the neck.
Is that true?
Absolutely. that was my attempt at starting a rumour. When I was doing the press tour for Exodus, Christian Bale would tell journalists very kind of straight-faced that I went so far playing my character that I insisted they had a gold G-string made for me. And it was like, no matter how much I protested, it was just going to make it sound even more like I had a chest full of gold G-strings.
Sure.
That was just me. The whole press trail can get a little bit tedious.
Yeah.
Didn't you recently do that thing where you tried to say weird words during an interview or during the project?
Yeah,
absolutely.
One game that I have to play. The other one is to just tell untrue stories about each other and try and hope that they stick and catch fire on the internet.
I've wanted to do that. I've wanted to see if we could get someone's Wikipedia page changed by bringing up something that was completely false, working it into their Wikipedia page and then seeing how much they get asked about it. I apparently, I think it's on my IMDb page, says I'm related to David Hasselhoff. I don't know where that one came from, but I know where people have gone looking for their information when I get asked.
That sounds like something you made up when you're at the height of obsession with Baywatch.
You know, he had his comeback. Remember when he was doing the rounds of the internet? He was like one of the first memes before he even knew what a meme was. Him just stroking kittens and puppies and baby tigers, doing his best David Brent. It was fantastic. Who wouldn't want to be related to him?
That incident where his daughter was trying to get him to stop drinking, it was very sad. He was lying on the floor of his kitchen trying to eat a burger.
Yeah, he took it apart. He deconstructed the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, mate, promise me this. Should something happen where a gold statuette comes your way, could you just fall off the rails just for a day and just, you know, pick apart a pie or something like that? Like, keep it Aussie.
Yeah, it's the great fear, I think. It's a new sort of actual fear is ending up an internet sensation for the wrong reason.
Well, keep the gold G-strings to yourself, Joel Edgerton.
I will.
We will catch it in cinemas in 2017. Fantastic story.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderfully told, brilliantly performed. We wish you all the best for the awards season run. Joel, thanks very much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Rove and Sam.
Look, today there was a story. It really made me giggle a little bit. So there is a convicted criminal and he's awaiting his sentence. It's a Brothers for Life gang leader. But there's a photo that's used, obviously the media write up about these stories.
Need to know who we're talking about.
Exactly.
What does this guy look like?
So they've used this photo of this guy and, you know, he's got a beard, he's got a shaved head, and he's like, you know what? I don't really like the picture. So he's approved a photo. He's sent in a photo and he's just like, hey, BT Dubs, can you use this one instead? Because I kind of don't like the picture you're currently using in the media.
So it's like going to the news.com.au people saying, I look a bit angry. Yeah. It's not my best angle.
Look, you know, you just can't.
Here's me looking a bit. I got shades on and a cap, leaning up against a car, looking a bit cash. Dare I say, less threatening. Could you use that one?
I know. Which I just found it quite amusing, actually.
Do you get to do that? I know there was a girl recently that was not happy with her mugshot and just sent through another one. Hey, guys, could you use this instead?
She posted it on She posted on her Facebook page saying, oh, can you use this pretty selfie of me instead of my mugshot? Mate, you cannot
you
do
can't.
That.
Nah, you can't, do you? Nah. Like, imagine that. Like, I, at the best of times, have had photos taken of me where you don't get permission over the shot you see it used and you're like, wait a minute, could you not? But they just go, well, that's the shot we took, I'm afraid. You know, like, I've sometimes been caught with my photo taken in public without my permission, and I might have my eyes closed or it's not my best angle, but I don't get to.
I don't get to say,
could you reuse it? Could I go back and buy milk again tomorrow? And I'll just put some makeup on. Like, how does a crim when they're okay? There's your shot. You're holding up your name tag. Turn to the right. Oh, I think I blinked. Can you go again? No,
they don't care, mate. Works. You've been, you know, possibly shooting people. Like, we don't care about your great cargo pants and your shades. You know, it's like me going every time that they use a photo. They always use the photos of me from Bachelor 2000.
Now
14.
Look, I love me a bit of young Sam Frost, a bit of young pup Sam Frost. She's naive. It looks like they've just squished it ever so slightly to compress it, so you get the wonderful before
Hell,
after
I
shot.
I lost 12 kilos, mate. I gained it once, and you're still using the photos. And it's like me going, hey, you know, I've kind of trimmed up a little bit. You want to just use this one instead,
mate? I mean, it's like you take away cheese platters for three square meals a day. Hey, there's your secret right there. Anyway, I look forward to seeing this guy's, you know. Could you send through a Snapchat one?
And imagine if you...
With the little, like, laurel wreath or the little dog face. Be on the lookout for a guy who's a vomiting unicorn.
Exactly.
Wake up, kids.
Rove and Sam.
That was Radio Gravy.
Like Rove and Sam on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @Rove and Sam.